basketball fans. Oh no, we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. I am Dan Grant, at Slammin' Danny G on Twitter, here with my man Russell, with the man Muscle, Russell Pedal, at Rusty Pedal Bike on Twitter. This is our second avenue of We The Podcast. We are excited to join you again this week to talk about all the things that have been going on with the Toronto Raptors since the All-Star break. Russell, how you doing?
Well, excited isn't a word I would use to describe myself, given the current climate in Raptor land, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously some strong feelings coming out of the Raptors fan base right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lots of positives, sure, over the last three games, but since the All-Star break, but obviously some pretty crappy news, but yeah. We'll get to that.
Absolutely. Why don't we just dive right into it and get to Raptors past, present, and future. Okay, so Raptors past this week, I mean, I think before we get to the news you just mentioned, we should talk about the positives of the past week, because on the last podcast, we jokingly said, you know, it would be really nice if the Raptors went 3-0 over the weekend, and guess what happened?
Yeah, they went 3-0, a convincing 3-0, and convincing is a bad word. They had a great win over Boston, a gutsy win there. Good win over Portland, and then a really, really ugly win over New York. But all games in which they went down by, you know, between 12 and 17 points, and just became a real grit and grind team over the last three games. Like, since the last time we talked, it's like the identity of the team has changed. Do you find that?
Totally. Move over Memphis. You know, Toronto, yeah. Toronto grit and grind is here.
You might have Vince Carter, but we're taking your identity.
Yeah, I mean, they left Canada. We're going to take something back from them. So the win over the Celtics, like you mentioned, was awesome. Obviously, it was such a slow start, and I think by halftime, most Raptors fans were kind of like, "All right, it's the first game. They're rusty." You know, PJ Tucker flew 77 hours to get here and decided he was going to play, which is awesome, but. You know, Ibaka looks, you know, like he's still learning what's going on, and the guys don't know. And, you know, right before the game, they announced Lowry wasn't playing. And it was kind of just like, all right, you know, we're not going to get this one. And then when they came back in the second half, it was just such a great feel-good win. It was a win the team hasn't had, a type of win the team hasn't had in quite some time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that exact feeling, I remember going through that whole roller coaster of emotion watching that game, where it was like, all right, they're rusty, they're adding new pieces, it's not our night, whatever. Could have gotten this one, it would have been a big deal. But then, yeah, they cue the comeback, and a lot of things to like about PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka, I'll tell you that much.
Completely agree there. I mean, I think it's been really interesting, because with Lowry out, you're seeing DeLon Wright, and even last night you're seeing some Fred VanVleet in there too. So it's almost like a completely different team than the team we've been watching all season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So actually, I was going to ask you, could you take me a little bit through the Portland win? I only caught bits and pieces of that one. I saw the full Celtics and Knicks games, but how did that game go down?
Well, I mean, it was a same idea, kind of a slow start. They went down early. And just, you know, chipped away at it. I think that it wasn't like the same level of an intensity. Like, you know, in that first game, you had a lot of like big PJ Tucker moments and late in the game and stuff like that. It feels like they just kind of didn't come roaring back as much as that. You know, just looked up at one point. It's like, oh, they're winning now.
Right. Yeah.
So it was like a game that they feels like they should have gotten. And as I was watching it, especially having watched the Celtics game, I was like, I feel like they're just going to come back and win this. It didn't. I don't really know what more to say than that. Just that it felt like a game as it was going on. I was like, okay, I think they're going to come back and win this and it'll be fine. The big takeaway from all three of the games really is DeRozan. Like, he's put them on his back, and that was my major takeaway from that game. Is just like, you know, he hit a point where like he just got to the line a ton, and that ended up being the difference in the game. And you know, Serge Ibaka had arguably his best game of the three. He had 18 and 10.
Yeah.
And it's like it's funny, because I know that PJ Tucker, I think he had like 2 points and a rebound, like compared to the near double double he had in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
But you just feel like when he's on the floor, like it makes a difference. Like he's one of those guys that is a non-stat all-star. Like,
totally.
He's on the floor and you know that the team is doing better because he's there and because of the, like the little things, the hustle plays, the deflections, getting in passing lanes, you know, even like timely fouls or like picks and stuff like that. So, he's a major fan favorite right out of the jump, you know.
Totally, he seems. I have in my notes, PJ Tucker, Golden God. So yeah, it's crazy because, like, I mean, as I said, I didn't watch that game that much, but I've seen the last two games, and it just feels like when he's on the floor, the team is. It feels more complete. Like he's going to get every loose ball. He's horrible to play. You can tell, even DeRozan talked about it, that he's one of the toughest defenders in the league on the wing. But you saw him guarding Carmelo, and he maybe not really long enough, but he's just in his face. And, you know, Carmelo makes shots because he's going to do that. And if Tucker's guarding guys like that, Paul George and LeBron or whatever, they're going to score some points. But he's going to make them work for it. And having him and Ibaka playing together is just wild in terms of how much the identity of the team feels different. It just feels... in the post-game interview last night, DeRozan was saying it feels like they've just added a ton of toughness. And this team was always a skilled team. They were able to score, as we talked about last podcast, they were able to score with the best of them in the league. But adding that kind of toughness, that kind of feels more like, you know, some of the things they were lacking in the playoffs last year. When they got down against Indiana and Miami, they were turning to guys like Valanciunas and Corey Joseph for toughness. And those guys are still there, and they still have that, you know, the ability to kind of make plays. But having guys like Ibaka and Tucker is just taking it to another level.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. They get out there, and they're versatile, right? Like, they can both play multiple positions. They can defend, you know, on the perimeter, but also get down and dirty. And it's... I don't know. I'm instantly in love with both of them, and I love the combination of the two of them because they have some similarities in their, like, you know, in terms of hustle and also having a bit of range on top of, you know, being bruisers. So mm-hmm. It's really great. It's exactly looking back at it now. It's pretty much exactly what the team needed because, like you said, it kind of like adds on top of the skilled players that they have.
Yeah, totally. And I think one of the things that people were wondering about when he was added is how much time Ibaka would see at center. And if those three games are any indication, the answer is plenty. You know, Jonas has been playing really well, I think, when he's in the games. He's fouling a lot yesterday, but Ibaka is playing tons of minutes where he's playing with either Patterson or Tucker or Carroll at the four, and they're using him at center. So it's kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think the interesting thing and the story that's come out of this really is that Ibaka's playing a lot more at the five, and Valanciunas' minutes mm-hmm. have gone down quite a bit. He's averaging fewer than 20 minutes per game over the last three, and you know, not playing in the fourth, so. You know, the Valanciunas truthers are going to have a hard time with this and you know, a call for Casey's head. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's great that you can have so many different looks. Like if you need, you know, an offensive guy to have that soft touch down low, like depending on the matchup too, like you got to keep in mind, the Raptors have been playing teams that don't have big bruising front lines yet.
Mm-hmm.
So like, let's see what happens when they play like a team like Washington and maybe that someone like Valanciunas will be more important.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to have that versatility where you could put in a Patterson or an Ibaka or stick with JV or even go with Bebe if you were, you know, you want to stress an offense-defense thing, although he's kind of fallen a little bit out of the rotation. And now Poeltl suddenly is a thing. But I think that having that those options, I mean, they're a really deep team, and that's one of the big positives I take away from these three games, and especially with, you know, the big elephant in the room, the guy that's missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is there are ways to fill those gaps because it's not like you're losing, you know, you're losing your number one guy in Lowry. And I mean, we can have that argument. We could spend an entire podcast on that argument as if it's necessary to pick a number one guy. But, you know, in my mind, Lowry's the MVP of this team. And, you know, we can have that discussion someday, but, DeRozan is obviously, you know, the 1B to his 1A.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he stepped up these last few games, like whether that's sustainable over a long period of time, who knows? But I mean, you got to keep in mind the beginning of the season, he was basically doing this. So if he has to do that over the next few weeks and then Lowry comes back and can kind of ease off the pedal a bit when he when Lowry comes back, then I mean that's good too. It's going to be good for all these players to have to step up and fill in the gaps. And if you have to have ugly wins against the Knicks, I think that's going to do a lot for your team chemistry. It's going to do a lot for, you know, getting in good reps and hard, tough games. It's like, yeah, you shouldn't have that hard of a game against the Knicks, but like I said, your team's MVP is not there. So I think there are a lot of positives to take away from this.
Totally. An ugly win's better than an ugly loss, right? And I think getting those out of the way is pretty huge. So as you mentioned earlier too, DeRozan playing out of his mind, 37 points per game, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, shooting 53.6% from the field, and 13.7 free throw attempts per game in the 3 games over this weekend without Lowry. So, I mean, you can't...
Hitting 90% of them too.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, just devastating. There's not much more you can ask of the guy at this point. And like you said, it's not like this has never happened before. At the beginning of the year, he came into the season and just lit the whole league on fire. He put the league on notice. He was averaging over 30 a game. He had a 37 or 38% usage rate, which, if not for Russell Westbrook, would have been, you know, I think something near the top of an all-time kind of level usage rate. Obviously, that's tapered off as the season went on and Lowry kind of picked up his game and they found more balance. But the fact that he's being asked to do this, I think he's well up to the challenge. So the next thing I want to ask you, Russell, because of that, you know, they, even though these were nice wins, and yes, we've talked about all the new personnel and the fact that they're learning, but they barely beat non-playoff teams like Portland. And maybe you think Portland could wind up getting that 8 seed, and maybe they will. But the Knicks are definitely a non-playoff team. Even with DeRozan playing that well, does he have to maintain that astronomical level of play for the Raptors to be competitive with Lowry out of the lineup?
Maybe not necessarily, no. I think that it's good right now because the team is adjusting to having two new pieces that are playing big minutes. And Corey Joseph is playing outside of his role and, you know, DeLon Wright is getting acclimated to his role as well. So there are a lot of people shifted into new positions that they're not used to playing. And even you look at a guy like Valanciunas, he's playing less and has a lesser role. So I think while that's happening, having the consistency of a guy that goes out there and you know you're relying on him to get you a bucket when you need one, I think is a good thing. And it doesn't necessarily have to be sustainable because you're going to get a good JV game or you're going to get a game where, you know, like Damari Carroll hits a bunch of threes or something like that, or you're going to get a game where Valanciunas goes off and puts up a big 20-10 line or something like that. You're going to get more from these other guys. But for now, like during this period of feeling each other out, it's okay that DeRozan's the constant.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So if that's all true, I mean, and I think that it's right, I think what we need to do is move into Raptors present. And so we'll move to the second part of our segment here and actually finally stop dancing around it and talk about the Kyle Lowry injury. Now, I'm going to talk about some of the optics or lack thereof around the injury later in the show. But what I want to ask you is, and we've kind of said, I think we've kind of answered this already, but does the team have the depth right now to weather losing their best player potentially right up until the playoffs or maybe even into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, you can never really fully survive losing your best player. Like, you can't expect the team to play at the level that it would if they were at full strength. However, as we spoke about, I think the depth, especially at that position, right? Like, at the point guard, Corey Joseph is a, you know, I don't know if he's a starting caliber point guard, or at least he hasn't been this year, but I mean, at his peak, he's someone that you should be perfectly fine starting the game for you. And especially when you have so many other options in their starting lineup. And DeLon Wright looks like he might be a decent enough backup. And, you know, then you got Fred VanVleet as well to, like, you're not going to be stuck filling those minutes. Now, of course, it's not the same as Kyle Lowry. I mean, Kyle Lowry, you got to understand, like, there are few players in the league that have as much of an impact on their team statistically as Lowry does.
Totally.
As much as Lowry is not looked at as your typical superstar type player, like, people even will often leave him off their best point guards in the league lists. Like, you know what I mean? If someone were to name their top five, like a lot of people would leave Lowry off, which to me is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the big things, if you look at the team's net rating with him on the floor, is 8.1. And their net rating with him off the floor is -3.1. And that's easily the worst mark on the team.
That's unbelievable.
It's actually the only negative other than Patrick Patterson, who, you know, we talked about last week, is, you know, an advanced stats darling when it comes to these things. Mm-hmm. Because the truth of the matter is the team's a ton better with those two guys. But, like, let's focus on Lowry for a second. Like, that difference of 8.1 to 3.1, like, you're looking at 11.2 points per 100 possessions difference when he's on the floor versus when he's off. So obviously losing him is a big blow, and they're going to lose games that they would have won if Lowry were there. So maybe it's not a, you know, 56 win season like it was last year. Like, that's unrealistic. And maybe even the idea of them being the second seed is not as achievable as I might have thought before. Like, post trade, I would have said right away, okay, I think that second seed totally in reach. Probably likely. They're probably the second, but like, they're probably a better team than Washington and Boston overall, at least on paper. Now I think that'll be a bit more of a battle, but that's where games like Friday night against Boston and now this home and home with Washington that's coming up is incredibly important. Is, you know, jostling for that position, so that in a series at least you have the advantage of home court. But all that is to say, they can survive without Lowry, and they can keep afloat. And I wouldn't look at them and then say, okay, Lowry's not going to be with them the next 4 or 5 weeks. Okay, they're going to be a bottom bracket playoff team, or they're going to be in risk of slipping down to like 7th or 8th. Like, that's not, I don't think that's going to happen. There are too many good players on this team. There's another, you know, all-star, that the starting guard of the Eastern Conference all-star team is still on this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the additions of guys like Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker that are giving this team a new identity, and, you know, giving this team a new identity as something they can do to keep motivated while Lowry is out. There are some major holes. I think one of the major ones, of course, being that the team's obvious lack of 3-point shooting now without Lowry in the lineup.
That was my next question for you. So that's, yeah, that's so good segue.
We can get into that. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I was going to say with, now that the fact they've traded Terrence Ross and replaced him with PJ Tucker, who is a lot of things, but he's not a dead eye 3-point shooter. And, you know, you lose Lowry and his 8 3-point attempts a game at a 42% clip. Does the team have enough shooting?
Probably not. But I mean, we can be honest here. Like, the Raptors are not a team that's predicated on the 3-point shot. Like, not in the sense that, like, you know, the Rockets, if all of a sudden you took out the three point shots, like, where would they be? But in terms of 3-point attempts, they're like way down per game. Mm-hmm. They're what are they? They're 22nd in the league. They shoot 24.7 shots per game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're up there in percentage. They're ninth in percentage at 36.8, but they're not a volume 3-point shooting team. They're just an accurate 3-point shooting team. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, they take a hit because they've, as you said, they've lost Ross and they've lost to trade, and they've lost Lowry to injury. So that was arguably their two best shooters gone. You know, next to that, you've got Corey Joseph, who shoots 38.2%. I mean, that's pretty good. And then after that, your next best shooter is probably Serge Ibaka.
Yeah.
Or like Patterson, obviously, but percentage-wise, Ibaka's up there. Like, he's close to 40%.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you don't want him shooting a large volume every game, too. So I think that the idea here is to stick to the plan, right? Like, you were never a volume team, so don't try to be. Like, don't try to get into a shooting battle with the teams that chuck a lot of shots, right? Like, if you're playing a game against the Warriors and the Rockets and they're heaving 43s, or, I mean, even within conference, like someone like the Cavs, like they shoot 34 threes a night, basically.
Yeah, it's nuts.
The second most in the league. And the Celtics are right up there as well with 33. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing against those teams, like, don't go toe for toe with them from the 3-point line. Like, play your game, right? Shoot mm-hmm. your shot. So, and just rely on, you know, good open looks. Like, guys like Ibaka, Tucker, Patterson, Carroll, Powell, they can all hit a three.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like, yep.
That's not the problem. Like, there are a lot of players It's not like it's a team where you have guys that just absolutely can't stand outside. Like, you can put any of these guys in the corner and they can hit a shot. Mm-hmm. So you just don't have any dead eye shooters right now. That's fine. Just, you know, like I said, play to your strengths. And if it's not 3-point shooting, then don't fall into that. Don't feel, especially if you get down, because that's the thing too, is like each of these last few games has been, there have been these leads they've had to overcome, these deficits they've had to overcome, sorry. And, you know, it, they haven't gotten back by just nailing a ton of threes, right? They get down, they like Lowry's, DeRozan's getting to the line. They're grinding down possessions. They are, you know, getting out in transition, stealing, getting steals and things like that, getting in the passing lanes. So I think the important thing is to do that. And if this is your new identity and your new way of doing things, then stick to that and don't worry about the fact that, you know, they're not going to be quite as accurate from three for the next little while.
Yeah, for sure. I know at the beginning of the season, I was doing some writing for Raptors HQ, and the that stat you mentioned about, you know, their high, pretty decent percentage, but low amount of attempts was even more pronounced. I think when I wrote a game preview, they were like 28th in attempts, but like third or fourth in percentage. And that's fallen down a little bit. I think you saw Ross struggled after Christmas break, which probably had something to do with it. Christmas break, I'm talking like a teacher. in the new year, he struggled, and that had something to do with it. And I think Lowry in December was shooting like over 50% from three, and then he became a human being again. So that, that also affected that. But as you said, I mean, it's not, I think that's a really good point, that it's not really going to affect the team as a whole. And I think the fact that the guys they've added, like Tucker and Ibaka, and even now having DeLon Wright, playing some minutes for the team, who are all really good perimeter defenders, can help you limit those teams, the Bostons and the Clevelands, from actually hurting you with the three ball as much. And if you can kind of get them to play your game, then you're not going to miss that shooting as much. With that said, I think we need to move into Raptors' future, because what I wanted to talk about actually is the future, and the way that I think they're going to be able to weather Lowry being out is the fact that they actually have a decently easy schedule. They're playing a lot of teams that are kind of middle of the pack. Obviously, Washington has risen above that. When you looked at this schedule maybe a month ago, you'd have said, oh, back-to-back with Washington, that's not too bad. And now it looks like kind of a real test for this team. But if you look at even to the end of the year, say you get Lowry back for the season-ending game against the Cavaliers, and that would be good that he's back before the playoffs, but it's kind of somewhere in the middle. You'd rather have him back a little earlier so he can get some more time in. But let's just say that's, for the sake of argument, when he's coming back. If you look at the team's opponents up to then, they're playing the Wizards a couple times. They have the Bucks, the Pelicans, the Hawks, the Heat, the Mavericks, the Thunder, the Pistons, the Pacers, the Bulls, the Heat again, the Mavericks again, the Magic, the Hornets, Pacers, Sixers, Pacers again, Pistons again, Heat again, and then the Knicks. I did not hear, other than Washington, a team in there that really puts the fear of God in me. Obviously, the Thunder with Westbrook are always a challenge, and every team in there, you know, there's some playoff teams like the Hawks, but it's fine. It's a really actually pretty soft schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's among the softest in the league for the remaining games. I think among playoff teams in the East right now, it's the softest schedule outside of the Celtics. Oh, they have an incredibly soft schedule, but unfortunately. But it's fairly easy. There are a lot of sub 500 teams there. Mm-hmm. A lot of winnable games, and, you know, a good number of home games. Like, there's a big home stretch coming up, five straight games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is an okay time to, you know, be missing your best player. I mean, if it had been at the beginning of the season, you never get into a rhythm. If it had been even pre All-Star game or deadline, you wouldn't have had the reinforcements. It would have been more of a struggle. And then that might have affected how the deadline was treated. Like, is this really a year worth going all in on? Like, that's the funny thing in this. Like, if this wrist injury for Lowry had been announced before the All-Star game or before the deadline, like, obviously we noticed at the All-Star game that it was a thing. But I mean, if we had known that he was having surgery then, like, would the Raptors have pushed all the chips in and made these deals? Like, who knows? So I think in the end, you know, Lowry is someone who has a history of overdoing it, playing too many minutes, whether it's him, coach, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a guy that plays a lot of minutes and, you know, has a history of sometimes breaking down late in the season. And I mean, we saw last playoffs that he was just like, his shot was way off. And if the alternative was for him to play through this wrist injury and to really wear down, then I kind of am okay with the fact that he's going to get tons of rest.
Mm-hmm.
He has an injury that will not prevent him from staying in shape and exercising while he's out.
Totally.
His, you know, it'll take a bit of time for his shot to get back with, which, as you said, is a reason why you'd like to see him come back a little bit before the playoffs to at least, you know, get into rhythm. But I think that it could have been worse. Like, a little bit later in the season, a little bit earlier, I can't really find the time. Like, if you got to take Kyle Lowry away from me for 4 or 5 weeks, right in the middle of a playoff race where they're jockeying for position, it's not ideal, but I can't really pick another time when I would have put it if I had the option, you know?
Completely agree with you. I think that if you accept the fact that it was just bad luck, I don't know. Did you see how he hurt it against Charlotte?
No, I didn't see the actual moment, and I haven't seen it since then either. I don't know if I've just not been tuned in enough, but I haven't really come across where he heard it. Obviously, like, you know, first time I really had heard about it was the All-Star game when he had his wrist iced or wrapped or whatever it was.
Yeah, I haven't been able to find the clip. I haven't looked that hard, to be honest, but it didn't seem like it. There's no, you know, Zapruder film going around of Kyle Lowry falling or getting hard fouled or whatever the heck it was. But the point is, if it had to happen, if you accept that it was just a freak injury and it had to happen at some point, then this is actually, I think, the absolute best time for it to happen. It gets some rest going into the playoffs. It stinks that he can't play with his new teammates. But if he can come back and, you know, the short end of that recovery period, 4 weeks, 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks even, and get a few games in with him before the playoffs, and he's, you know, got his legs and he's ready to go, I think that's fine, especially if you're going to, you think the Raptors with this soft schedule are going to be able to maintain the 3 seed or the 4 seed. I mean, who are you going to play in the first round? You're going to play the Pacers or maybe the Hawks. I don't really know. I mean, that's probably one of those two teams, I would think. And that's not scary. They have good players. Yes, the teams, they're okay. It might be a 5 or 6 game series, but as a Raptors fan with the depth on this team, I'm not really scared. Now,
well, I mean, if it's the Hawks, Pacers, Bulls, or Pistons, like anyone in the bottom half of the bracket, I don't really, if Lowry's back especially, I don't see neither of those teams worries me to the point where I would, you know, I'm not concerned about either of those teams upsetting the Raptors. I mean, I know that the Raptors aren't completely removed from being a bit of a running joke when it comes to their playoff series and, you know, having lost those series to the Wizards and Nets a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they've earned themselves a bit of respect from last year, even though I know they didn't win those series convincingly, but
no, they won them
and they've still got to, you know, they've been there and they're going to play like they've been there. And, you know, it makes a bit of a difference. Like, the Celtics and the Wizards are two teams that, you know, I think could legitimately be a problem. And I mean, if it ended up that, you know, either way in the second round, if, like, I don't mean to look ahead of, like, look past the first round, but if they got to the second round, that's where the real challenge would come, is playing the Celtics, Cavs, or Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a full Raptors squad, the Hawks, Pacers, Bulls, and Pistons, neither of those teams gives me, like, feels like a real threat. Now, I might eat those words someday, but the fact that the matter is, they all have negative margins of victory.
Yeah.
So, like, at what point, whereas the Raptors have the 6th best in the league and the 2nd best in the Eastern Conference, like, I can't legitimately think that a team that averages a loss is going to win 4 out of 7 games against the Raptors if they have Lowry back.
Totally, and that's interesting. So let's talk about that. What if they don't have Lowry back? Do you think they could, let's go through the teams. Do you think they could beat the Pistons without Lowry?
Honestly, I'd still say that they can beat those four teams. Now, I wouldn't feel as confident about it being a sure thing, or close to a sure thing. Nothing's a sure thing, as we know.
Yeah, sure.
But Yeah, I think it would. I still think that they could beat them. So, I mean, yes, they could. There could be a scenario where Lowry's not back in time, and they could still win a series. And again, I'm only basing this on three games. Three games is not enough to make a real judgment call. But I mean, in all honesty, and what I've seen in the way that they've the poise they've had over the last three games, and I know they're non-playoff teams, but let's be honest. You know, the Bulls are a non-playoff team, really. You know what
it's
I mean?
True, absolutely.
If they make it, I mean, fine, but they are right there with Portland at the very least in terms of, I think, overall quality of their team. Like, yeah. The Bulls, Pistons, teams like that. Like, we're talking about the same level of team. Like, I'm not overly concerned. As long as they can stay in that top end of the bracket, like as long as they don't lose ground mm-hmm. and fall down to not having home court advantage, I think that there's nothing to be overly concerned about. But again, this is all crossing our fingers and hoping that Lowry's back and we don't have to think about that scenario too much.
Sure. I agree. The only for me, and I've thought about it too much because that's what I'm going to do sometimes, is that if that did happen and they wound up catching the Pacers again in the first round with an angry Paul George guarding DeMar DeRozan, that could be a tough series, just in terms of scoring. But the Pacers aren't good, so you know.
There's a counter to George now too, right? With Tucker mm-hmm. and
yep,
like between Tucker and Carroll, and you got to throw like he's going to play a whole game with those two guys on him, and then a bit of Powell mixed in maybe. But the and then at the end of the day, like who else do the Pacers have that we're concerned about? Obviously Turner, but I mean, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? In a big playoff game, like who's going to take over and beat them if George is well covered, like,
yeah,
you know,
yep.
no one.
Yep, it's true. I think it might be a really, really awful series, like 75-70 every game.
Yeah.
So, anyway, all right, cool. So, Raptors future, we always want to look kind of really far ahead there. Let's look to this week. Obviously, we talked about there's the back-to-back with Washington coming up. Then they've got the Bucks on Saturday, which is a back-to-back. Sorry, I should have said back-to-back with Washington. It's a home-and-home with Washington. There's a day off in the middle. They play Wednesday, Friday, and then they have a game off. They have a game of Saturday against the Bucks, and then they have 3 days off, which is nice, before they play New Orleans, Atlanta, and Miami on a road trip next week. So
those are all at home, not to correct you. But
oh, sorry about that. I wrote that down wrong. Those are all home games, so that's even better. Yeah. It's just when I looked at it, it seemed like it made sense geographically. But I was like, oh, yeah, it must be on the road. So anyway, the games against Washington, I think, are a huge test because the Wizards have been, you know, since the calendar turned to 2017, they've just been probably the best team in the Eastern Conference. They've added, you know, they're playing the Warriors tough right now as we're recording this. John Wall, for me, is just I don't know if you can call him a top 10 player in the league, maybe the way he's playing right now, but he's definitely for me a top 5 athlete in terms of just his absolute physical skills. And if he could ever put it together, which it seems like he's finally doing this year, he's just such a talented dude that he's going to pose them a huge problem tomorrow, especially with Lowry not in the lineup. I know, you know, obviously Joseph and Wright, you can throw people at him, you can throw Powell on him maybe, but no one can really guard his speed.
No. But it's funny though, because like you say that, it's like I'd almost rather have Joseph on him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
In a vacuum. So yeah, we're not like, you know, we're losing Lowry's offensive skills, but I mean, we're not losing a lot on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. He's a good defender, Lowry. Like he's a plus defender in my mind, but he's not a shutdown defender.
No, it's because of his size, right? He's never going to be a total, like, he doesn't have the
length. Especially against someone like Wall. So, mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, like, if Joseph's main role is to go out there and just stick to get into Wall's jersey, then I think that's a plus. And then, you know, worry about the offense coming from somewhere else. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out. And, of course, you know, as you know, Corey Joseph is a wizard killer, so.
Yeah, he is. I remember I watched that game where he hit that shot last year. It was another one. That was, honestly, we were talking about feelings in games, and that game was a game like the Celtics game.
Very much so, yeah. I really remember that being an important game that really stuck out to me, just like the Celtics one did this Friday. Exactly the same feeling, like, okay, this is good. I feel like we can build on this.
Totally. And when it was him who took the shot, in my mind, I was like, ah, Corey Joseph. But then it went in, and it was like a beautiful shot. So I was just like, oh, yeah.
And the cool thing is, we'll always remember that, you know, like someday 20 years from now, we'll be talking about, remember when Corey Joseph was a Raptor? And we'll talk about that game just the same totally. As like, and it's a better legacy than like, you know, Chris Childs.
Yeah, I was out on a date with my wife, and there was just this tiny little TV in the place we went, and there was a guy who was with a group of people, and he was apparently the only one who was interested in watching it, and he kind of like wandered over, and the only way he could see the TV was to stand really awkwardly by our table. And it was like, it wasn't like a fancy place or anything, but it was pretty funny because he was watching and then I started watching, and my wife likes basketball. She'll watch it, you know, here and there, but it wasn't really a go out to watch basketball kind of night. But then the game was a good one and we all turned and we wound up watching, and then his friends kind of wandered over and everyone was just staring at this tiny little old school television. And then obviously the optimal result came about. So, but like you said, I'm always going to remember that game.
Big time, big time.
Yeah, cool. So, let's see. I mean, the Bucks on Saturday, I mean, stinks that that's a back-to-back, but, you know, I think that's a game that the Raptors are going to want to get. So, I'll ask you again like I did last week. What record would you be happy with the Raptors putting up this week?
2-1. I'd like to see them beat the Bucks. I'm okay with them splitting with the Wizards.
Yeah,
like, I think that asking for two games out of the Wizards is too much, given how good they've been. So I'd like for them to win at, you know, ultimately their home game. Mm-hmm. So if they get a split with Washington, and they already have a game in hand in that series, like they won the first one, this is going to close the series. It's only a 3-game series. Mm-hmm. So if they take one of those two games and ultimately win the season series, and that, because that could be important when it comes to playoff seeding down the road.
Yep.
So that's what I want from that, and I'd like for them to beat the Bucks. I know that the Bucks are vying for a playoff berth. They're currently a game and a half out of eighth in 10th place. But ultimately, a team in 10th place is a team you should beat. Just like, you know, a team in the 11th is the Hornets, and a team in 12th is the Knicks. Like, those are games you should win. So I'm going to go ahead and say a game at home against the Bucks is a game they should win, and they typically play the Bucks really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2-1 is what I want from this week.
Yep, I'd agree with that. I think that's completely fair. I mean, if you saw 1-2 happen, that would stink. It would be a very Raptors, historically, not this season, Raptors thing to win both Wizards game and then lose to the Bucks.
but I think ultimately I'd be okay with that. Like the 2-1 is important, and especially the season series against Washington is far more important than the Milwaukee one. So
yes.
Lose a game to the Bucks. I mean, if it's ends up being a schedule loss because it's the second night of a back-to-back, then so be it.
Yeah, totally.
Plus they've won all 3 games against the Bucks this year. So and two of them were blowouts. So
yeah, so there you go. So, all right, well, that's the end of Raptors past, present, and future, and we're going to try something a little new right now. Russell, you're a busy guy, am I right?
Very busy, yeah. I got a 2-year-old. I got a lot of jobs, several jobs.
Yeah. Okay, so I imagine, like, and I know that you're a teacher like I am, and you probably at some point in your life you enjoyed reading books, am I right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I definitely enjoyed reading books. I like talking about reading books, and my current lifestyle between full-time work as a teacher, part-time work as a writer, as a musician, all these things, I definitely do not have time to read books.
Right. And I try to make some time, but I always find myself, you know, falling asleep in bed reading books, and it's the same thing. So one of the great things about the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, which is what we're on right now, is one of our sponsors is Audible.com, which does audiobooks. And for you listening out there, the listeners of We the Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. There's over 180,000 titles on Audible.com that you can check out. You can download things to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any MP3 player of any kind if you somehow have something that's not one of those three. And, you know, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and I have listened to audiobooks that way as well. But one thing I wanted to recommend to the listeners of this podcast is I was checking out Audible before the game before the podcast, and there was a ton of really cool basketball biographies on there. Boys Among Men by Jonathan Abrams, all the David Halberstam stuff, like the Breaks of the Game. You can really listen to some really cool stuff. And actually my personal favorite, which is Loose Balls by Terry Pluto, which is the history of the ABA in the 70s.
Oh, nice.
And it's awesome. The whole book is a giant oral history. It's kind of where they got, not the first time they ever did it, but it was a book that was published a long time ago. And it has just stories of people who were around, because there's not a ton of footage. They didn't have TV contracts. So there's people like Bob Costas. There's people like famous celebrities that own teams. Isaac Hayes was a person who owned a team. Apparently he tried to buy it with a hockey bag full of cash. and they showed up and he was wearing like the bottom of a velour jumpsuit and had a handgun in the back and had just $300K in a hockey bag. And they're like, Isaac, that is not how this works.
Now these are great stories that you could be getting if you signed up for Audible.
Absolutely. So to download your free audiobook today, you can go to audible.com/almighty. That's audible.com/almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y. And you'll be able to get your free audiobook and trial. So I think that's something that our listeners would enjoy.
Absolutely. I myself have been looking for a way to put aside time to read Boys Among Men, and I think I'll give it a run on Audible.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. So now, Russell, it's time for you to pipe down, because we're going to move into this week's edition of the Grant Rant. All right, so today's Grant Rant is about the Raptors' fallen leader, Kyle Lowry, who we've obviously discussed in depth. While it's completely understandable for some fans to be frustrated about his wrist injury, just as the team made the key additions of Ibaka and Tucker and appeared poised for a strong finish to the season, some fans are questioning Lowry's decision to participate in All-Star Weekend. I mean, there are the usual extremist morons saying dumb stuff like this proves that Lowry is selfish or thinks he's above the team. But to quote Raptors HQ man Sean Woodley, moron's gonna moron. he said that to me yesterday on Twitter, and it's absolutely true. The problem for me, though, is that even reasonable fans are talking about the optics, quote-unquote, of the injury being negative, as if they have any idea what conversations went on between Lowry and the Raptors. So let's talk about those optics. Lowry was first heard against the Hornets before the All-Star break. The team checked him out and presumably cleared him to go and participate in All-Star Weekend. Unless we hear anything different, that's how it had to go down. It's not like they ordered him to stay home and he just went anyway. So now anyone who saw the usually dead-eye Lowry shoot in the three-point contest on Saturday knows he was not 100%. I think he racked up 9 points. He was terrible. Everything was off. And I'm sure he knew at that point that he was not right. Something was probably wrong. And, you know, when you hear that, so why did he play in the game on Sunday then? The people will groan. And what a selfish decision, they will whine. You know what I say? He's a damn professional basketball player. How did you think he was going to test and see if his wrist was really hurt? He was going to shoot a bunch, probably three-pointers, and then probably try it again in a practice situation. Maybe a light game where he probably wouldn't have any tough defenders bugging him. A game like the NBA All-Star game. Lowry played just 17 minutes and 43 seconds. He took 11 shots, and he made 7 of them. He was 5 of 9 from 3. It's not like he went out and couldn't shoot and then just decided to shoot and shoot until he injured his wrist so badly that he single-handedly derailed the Raptors' playoff chances. He didn't do anything out of the ordinary. He went, took a bunch of shots, went for a run, played some basketball, and figured out that things weren't right. After he sustained the injury against Charlotte, the surgery was probably a foregone conclusion. If it had to happen, it's better that it happened now, so as we mentioned before, he has time to rest and recover before the playoffs. Yes, Lowry's injury sucks. It's a brutal blow for Raptors fans, especially if he can't return until the playoffs begin. I understand the urge to panic and the need for passionate fans to find someone or something to blame. It's only natural. But Kyle Lowry isn't that something or someone. You can see from how involved he is on the bench that it's killing him not to be on the floor. He's the leader of the team, and that doesn't stop just because he's injured. His injury is unfortunate, but in professional sports, this shit happens. There's no avoiding it. Stop blaming Kyle Lowry for an injury sustained under completely normal circumstances. Stop looking for zebras when you hear hooves. Start supporting your team, or do us all a favor and go watch spring training baseball. Grant Rant over.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I like that. I want to, like I said last week, I'd like to just like cut that up and put it in a nice little package and have it as a reply to Twitter trolls.
Thank you.
Yeah, really good. The, I agree completely. I had a hard time, and I kind of abstained from the whole conversation on Twitter about that. People mm-hmm. were very angry at first when they heard about it. A lot of our friends, the Raptors blogging community, basically just ripped into the team and to Lowry and everything like that. And I can't pretend that I know what went on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a guy's livelihood. He cares about where the team is as much as we can think, like, you know, he needed to be saved from himself or whatever. At the end of the day, like, we don't know what conversations were had. We don't know what he was going through. This sounds like a freak injury. This sounds like something that maybe they, like, let's be realistic. If they knew that it was this bad and that it required surgery, like, would he have played in the All-Star game? No.
No way.
Would
no
the
chance.
Team have let him even go? No. Like, no one realized it was this serious. And even, like, he had it iced in the game and still went out and played again. And as you said, went 5 of 9 from deep. Like, there were no mm-hmm. indications that this was an injury that would require surgery and missing, you know, 4 to 6 to 8, whatever it is, weeks. So, you know, I think that we can make a lot of guesses about what happened and we can make a lot of assumptions and accusations and stuff. But at the end of the day, we don't really know. And the team, you know, has come out and said the things that they've said. And I don't get any indication that they feel like they screwed this up. And
no, there's that's the other thing too. It's not like anyone seems like, oh shit, like I can't believe this happened, or oh, we really should have avoided this. This is really, you know, we've made some horrible error. And obviously, they're not going to say that to the public if that's what they do think. I'm not in an organization that's run as well as the Raptors is.
Yeah,
but come on, like let's as I said at the end, stop looking for zebras when you hear hooves. It's probably just a horse.
I love that expression.
Thanks. Me too. I enjoy it a lot. So I'll see if I can work that in again in the future.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So the Grant rant, that's it. Let's move on. Russell is going to come out now with his latest installment of Dinos and Digits. Here we go.
All right. So, one thing that has really fascinated me with the Raptors this year is, just straight up 5-man lineup data. Basically looking at the fact that the Raptors, have these 5-man combinations that are among the best in the league. And it's been that way pretty well all season. Up until a few weeks ago, in fact, they had 2 of the 5 best lineups in terms of net rating for lineups that had more than 100 minutes together. Now, a couple of those have fallen off, and there are different iterations that are rising to the forefront from different teams. But the Raptors still have the 3rd best 5-man lineup in the league. With at least 100 minutes played. And I think that's really cool. Now, the thing is this particular lineup happens to be Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Damari Carroll, Patrick Patterson, and Jonas Valanciunas. Now, that lineup that lineup combination was also a big net rating last year. So it's a killer combination. It's got a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of D, a little bit of offense, you know, spreads the floor. And it's interesting now to look at it. And the reason I want to talk about it this week is because in a way we kind of have to say goodbye to this lineup because mm-hmm. not only is Lowry out for a while, but Patterson is the de facto, closer for the power forward position where he didn't start, like, you know, it took 2 years of us, like a lot of people clamoring for him to start at the 4 to be part of that lineup full time and to make that the starting lineup to eliminate the slow starts. But let's be honest, we're very rarely going to see this lineup anymore without an Ibaka in Patterson's place, or without Ibaka perhaps in Valanciunas' place. So I just think I wanted to take a moment and kind of say, look, this lineup of 5 guys that has been on the team the last couple of years, this season in 147 minutes played, had a 129 offensive rating. That's among the best in the league for a minimum 100 minutes. In fact, it is the best now that I look at it. it had a defensive rating of 102.2 points allowed per 100 possessions, which isn't bad. It's passable. Mm-hmm. For a net rating, like a ridiculous net rating of 26.8 points per 100 possessions. in the positive. And that ranks up right up there with basically the best Golden State lineup, the best Cleveland lineup, and then this Raptors lineup.
That's nuts. I don't know if the mic picked it up, but when you read off that offensive rating, I choked. I choked in my water. it was legit. I almost spit water all over my wife's Mac here, which would have been the end of my life. So I'm glad that didn't happen. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting point that we have to say goodbye to them, because we talked before about how, you know, Jonas isn't really playing that much. His minutes are way down. We're seeing more lineups with Ibaka, with Tucker, and, you know, just with the Lowry injury, that five-man unit's probably not going to get a whole lot of run.
No, but there is a little bit of hope. When you look at the last three games, now we're talking ultra, ultra small sample sizes here.
Yeah, okay.
The lineup of Corey Joseph, DeMar DeRozan, Damari Carroll, PJ Tucker, and Serge Ibaka. Okay, so this has been an important closing lineup for the team in the last few days. Has a net rating of, wait for it, 57.3, based on an offensive rating of 165.7 points scored per 100 possessions. Now, obviously, 17 minutes is like way too small of a sample size to draw anything from that, but it's the beginnings of something. And, you know, you got to keep in mind, once you add Lowry, who's a plus-minus monster, to this mix, and you have these combinations where now you can have, you know, a front line that includes some combination of, well, Valanciunas if you need rebounding and offense. And then down the line, you can have different combinations of Ibaka, Patterson, Carroll, Tucker in your front line while holding down the guard positions with Lowry and DeRozan. There are a lot of excellent lineup combinations that can rebound, that can spread the floor, that can be super efficient on offense. Like this is what we talked about last week in the Raptors, with the possibility of having, you know, an all-time great offensive rating. At the end of the day, they're just the pace is super low, but the, you know, this concept that you need to be a fast team to be good on offense is real. They really debunked that theory, because they're in terms of efficiency, and we talked about earlier, like maybe not a high volume of threes, but accurate. You know, getting to the line a lot and hitting it at a good clip, like we talked about last week, of a reason we wouldn't want to trade for Andre Drummond, and good field goal percentage. All these things add up, and it's a very efficient offense, and the pieces are all there to make that happen. So while they might not be the best defensive team, and these lineups might not be, you know, killer defensive lineups, although we have seen really great stuff out of Ibaka and Tucker, two-man combinations. At the end of the day, they have the ability to put five great players on the floor. And that's one thing that you take away from this team. And we talked about the depth. At the end of the day, there's something to be said about a team that doesn't play any bad players.
Yeah.
And
totally,
you know, in a playoff game, like the Raptors don't have to give any minutes to anyone who's a minus on the floor, and especially at full strength. So once Lowry's back and everything like that, and that's not to say that the lower end point guards are a minus or anything, because they're doing well as well. But I mean, when you get to the point where every position is at least 2 to 3 deep, you're in good shape.
Yeah, I agree. I had a couple things that I thought of while you were talking about that. Something I forgot to mention earlier, when you're talking about how just well run sort of the team is on the floor, the Raptors, I believe, are third lowest in turnovers per game, around just under 13, like 12.7 per game. They're one of the best teams at taking care of the ball, and that just completely goes to that point that you were making just about all the things that they do so well. They're so careful, and they just do things properly. They try to limit their mistakes. And against Washington, that's going to be interesting, because Washington does the best job of turning the ball over on their opponent. I think they force about 16 turnovers a game. So I think when we're looking at that Washington home and home, that's going to be a big difference in the game, and see kind of the rock and the hard place where those things meet. Go ahead.
Yeah, to that point, just to even further emphasize your point, those numbers are thrown off, like the per game numbers with turnovers are thrown off a little bit by pace.
Right.
And the fact that the Raptors go at a really slow pace, so naturally they have low turnovers. But even pace adjusted, like if you look at their turnover percentage, they're second. They're second in the entire NBA at 11.3 versus Charlotte. Whereas, you know, as you said, the Wizards are second in the league in forcing turnovers at 14.1%. So you're looking at, like you said, rock and a hard place. So
yeah, so that'll be, yeah, definitely. So you're right. That's the better context to put it in. And then the other thing you mentioned about, you know, Tucker and Ibaka, and not having to play any bad players. I tweeted that stat at you earlier, about how Tucker and Ibaka have played so much in fourth quarters already. And this, I think Josh Lewinberg had this earlier today and said that, in three games, out of the 36 fourth quarter minutes that there have been, Ibaka's played 31 minutes and is a plus 20. And Tucker's played, I think, 28 or 29 minutes and is a plus 19. So, again, small samples. Yeah, small sample size, like you said, but more of that, please.
Well, they've played 47 minutes together in total and have a net rating of 18.2 in that period.
So. It's just so devastating. Yeah. So, and that's awesome. So I think that's kind of the takeaway from this week. We'll be able to see how things play out, and we'll talk about it again in a week. So just to finish up, I want to, you know, finish with, as always, this day in Raptors history. So on today, February 28th of last year, after playing 43 minutes the night before and scoring 43 points and beating the Cleveland Cavaliers almost single-handedly, Kyle Lowry earned himself a day of rest. So the next night, the Raptors went to Detroit. They were 40-19. And they were looking to kind of rest players, obviously, going into the stretch, and they gave Lowry the day off. The Pistons were a 500 team. They were 31-29 at the time, and they thumped the Raptors with Lowry out. DeRozan was 9 of 21 from the field. He had 20 points and 7 assists, a 33% usage rate. But he was a minus 29 for the game with a 137 defensive rating. Oof. Yeah, so, and Jonas Valanciunas had a similarly bad game, but DeRozan was really, he had the worst rating on the team, and just obviously struggled. And I want to compare that to what we just mentioned before, how well he's played this stretch with Lowry out. He had a 42% usage rate in that game against the Knicks yesterday, and has been a plus 23 over the three games with Lowry out. Against the Knicks, that in that game, he had a plus a 126 offensive rating and a 105 defensive rating. So even though it was a close game, the team was better with him on the floor. He was a minus one overall, but he was a plus in both the wins over a huge plus in both the wins over Boston and Portland, and just the strides he's taken as a player each season are incredible. So just seeing even the difference between last year when the Raptors were the best Raptors team in the history of the team, and this year when he's been able to step up in such an incredible way, it's not something that you ever would have expected. I think if Lowry had suffered a similar injury at this time last year, there would have been a lot more doom and gloom. Obviously, the acquisitions helped that. But the new acquisitions of Ibaka and Tucker, but the fact that DeRozan has really, really blossomed into a true superstar, and he is. I mean, he's not one of the five guys that if you put anyone around him is going to win you a title, but he's a superstar. He's a perennial all-star, and he's our homegrown superstar. He's been here forever, and he's, you know, really the first one in team history that's been here for this long. So I think we need to appreciate him for what he is and kind of give him that respect and be there for him this next month, because he's going to really have to shoulder the load.
Excellent point.
Thank you. Okay. So we'll just finish off by saying it on Twitter. Russell, where can you find the podcast on Twitter?
You can find the podcast in all kinds of places. Now we're on twitter.com at We The Raps Pod. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/We The Raps Pod. And if you want to send us an email and give some feedback on the show, you can email us at wetherapspod@gmail.com. And yeah, you can find us on iTunes now too. If you search We The Podcast Raptors, we should be one of the first things that comes up. And you can subscribe to us there, leave us a review. That stuff really helps. So we'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely. The reviews are really great. Only good reviews, please. No, I'm just kidding. If you have any feedback or anything you want to tell us or ask us, tweet at us, ask questions. We really want to engage with the listeners. So please, please do that. And you can find us all the places Russell mentioned. You can also find me at Slammin' Danny G on Twitter. And you can find Russell at Rusty Pedal Bike. So I'm Dan Grant.
And I'm Russell Pedal.
And get out the salami and cheese, mama, because this podcast is over. Whoa, 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 oh, 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 whoa, whoa.
guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.